fun bit is over. The parties have ended, the raucous rallies are no longer. There's a sense of reality starting to set in here in Hungary. And for Peter Magyar, he now has to govern within a system that's revolved around one man for 16 years. Now, he's promising more transparency when he assumes office inside that building in about a month's time. Sweeping changes, really. But there is scepticism in some parts here in Hungary that Peter Magyar will be able to deliver on any of that.
Okay, so today we're going to be talking about something that may seem remote to you, but it's actually something that's happening all over the world, and I think we need to be aware because the world has become very small, as you know. And I'm talking about the defeat of Viktor Orban in Hungary after 16 years as their prime minister, who, a guy that closed them off to immigration, would not cooperate with the EU's dictates to bring in young Muslim men, which is what main part of Europe did. They have no illegal immigrants in their country, moving people back to their faith, introducing conservative principles in school, and all kinds of things. And so President Trump was supporting him, and J.D. Vance went over to campaign for him as well. So this was a pretty stunning defeat because 2/3 majority of the parliament went to the other party, and the other candidate actually is the victor. Well, what does that mean to us? Well, it means that the new Europe, which is all those countries that were part of the Soviet Union, and when the Soviet Union broke up, you know, pulled apart and established their own name and identity. And of course, Hungary had a strong identity before the Soviet Union swallowed them up. But reconstituting themselves as countries, and actually the new Europe has given us a kind of a hope, because the old Europe, Germany and France and all of this, have become so dead in so many ways, so seduced by socialism and even communism, I think, and making really foolish decisions. And yet many of our leaders here think Europe is the model. Europe is the model of how we should, you know, be handling our country. And I just don't understand how they could be so silly, but that's the truth. So, but New Europe saw things differently. So this defeat of Orban is very important. And I'm going to talk today with my good friend Matt Schlapp. Matt got to know Viktor Orban. It's through Matt that I met Viktor Orban and was interviewed by Hungarian television a few years ago at CPAC. And so we're going to have a discussion about what happened and what to expect in Hungary now. And so I hope you'll stay tuned for that. Right now, the voices in our culture are really loud, but the truth is often silent. And today, Preborn needs you to help speak the truth loudly. And one of those ways that you can speak the truth is talking about the preciousness of life in a mother's womb. You know, that's a truth that will never change. There are so many people that talk about my truth, your truth. You know, truth is what comports with reality. And I think it would be easy to prove that the reality is that there is something inherently wrong about a woman taking the life of her baby. It's just, you know, there might have been some circumstances in the past where there were terrible choices that had to be made. But this is not the truth here. This is we have women who just arbitrarily, they want to finish their degree, or they, you know, it's not convenient for them at the moment. They have a good job. Now, a lot of people, women, are just really caught up and in trouble. I'm not diminishing that. But a lot of people, it's just abortion is just a thing they do for convenience. And surely that can't be right. And we need to speak the truth about that. That's a sacred thing. It's actually the heart of God. It's also, if you want to be harsh, Genesis, in the very first chapter, says that a human cannot take the life of another human. It's against God's plan, and it's his dictate. Even before the commandments, he said that. So it's a big deal when you take your baby's life. And that's something we need to be very frank with women about while telling them about forgiveness. And that's what Preborn does. Preborn is very honest and upfront, and they very winsomely show their moms the babies in their womb by showing the baby in ultrasound, but via ultrasound. And it's just powerful because it is, in fact, truth. It's that truth. And so it's a quiet truth, maybe, but it's something that we could tell and also support by our money. And I'm asking you to help Preborn, as so many of you are. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. It's $28 for one ultrasound. And, of course, you can give more than that, and we appreciate your generosity in every single case. So go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, this is Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios 24/7. It's our pleasure to bring you this information, and I am so humbled when you do listen, and it really encourages me when I hear your comments and see your phone calls. And so I want to invite you to do more of that, actually. Our phone number is 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040, or you can write me at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Well, today's going to be interesting because Matt and I are going to be talking about Hungary, yes. We'll be talking about other areas of the world and what's happening there, and also our own elections and midterms. So all of that on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
I cried when I was putting the X on my vote.
I'm Katya Adler, the BBC's Europe editor, and I'm in downtown Budapest at a big concert called Dismantle the System. It's on the eve of really important elections here. Everyone around here is excited. They believe change is coming to this country, that for the first time in 16 years, they could get a new prime minister. How are you feeling?
I'm really excited. I think there's a big chance that we can change this system right now, and I can really feel that it's changing, and everyone can feel it.
Most of the concert goers here are part of what's known in Hungary as Generation Orbán, so youngsters that have pretty much grown up during Viktor Orbán's 16 years as Prime Minister, as their country has become one of Europe's most corrupt and most illiberal. And what these first-time voters are doing here tonight is dancing, chanting, singing, and shouting for change.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. The BBC reporter is quite happy that Viktor Orbán lost. You can hear that. And it's a lot of young people celebrating. And I find myself, I've read a lot this morning. I think I know about Viktor Orbán, but I'm not sure. But I know someone who does know, and he's a good friend of mine. His name is Matt Schlapp. Matt, thank you for joining us this morning.
Sandy, great to be with you again.
Yeah, let me introduce you to everybody again. You are the chairman of the American Conservative Union. By the way, the ACU does has been grading congressmen, scoring them, senators and House and representatives for years. And a really tough grader. It is kind of the gold standard for rating them. And also, Matt is responsible for CPAC, which is probably what most of you are most familiar with, because I've always gone to the CPAC conferences, and you see them all over television. And so, and most recently, they were in Dallas, Texas. And Matt, my audience doesn't know. I haven't told them anything. I wasn't able to go because I hadn't, because I had a couple of things. I had a flood in my house, and I also had an accident, which I didn't tell you about, but I could not come to Dallas. So I know it was a great success, but can you just give us an idea of what happened down there?
Yeah, I can tell you it was a lot of people from all over the world and all over the country who are, you know, they're worried about things. They're worried because we had this great victory with Donald Trump, but coming together, you see this, like, growth of these communities in Texas that want Sharia law. So the Texans were very worked up about that. And we got engaged in the Cornyn versus Paxton primary for Paxton, which a lot of Texans are worried that, not that John Cornyn's a bad guy, but that he's just too inert at a time when we need to fight like heck. And the people around the world were, you know, worried about what would happen in Hungary. And of course, Orbán lost this important election in Hungary. And then we have all of this promise in Central and South America and Western Europe, where it looks like we're on the cusp of even more victories. So, and then put all that together with the fact that we've got now, we've done two CPACs in America after Trump, you know, regained the presidency. So we don't have too much time left.
No, we don't, Matt. And I want to talk about the domestic thing. We certainly should do that. But it never occurred to me, because I was going to talk to you about your overseas work and about why don't we come back to that? Because I want to talk to you about your international work. Certainly, CPAC has become, I think, like the spark plug for the whole conservative movement. I mean, thousands of people come, and it's a great gathering of like-minded people to listen to each other, get inspired, and go back and do more, do better. But some time ago, Matt, you started doing things internationally. I'm not quite sure how that started. How did it start?
Basically, Jay Aiba from Japan was coming to our American CPACs, and he said, "I'd like to do one in Japan." And I said, "What are you, nuts?" And and then we said, "Sure, let's do it." I mean, the thing is, what we try to do at CPAC is really be open to innovation, ideas, an entrepreneurial spirit. I know we all kind of I've served in government, Mercy served in government, but at the end of the day, you know, learning all the lessons of government doesn't really help us save civilization. It can help us manage government. So we have to, you know, learn from our friends in the private sector, and CPAC tries very much to hold on to that as part of our kind of elan or mission. And so he said, "Let's go to CPAC." And I said, "Okay, how are we going to pay for it?" Because I always worry about that, because I got to pay the bills. And he said, "Well, we'll pay for the event, and but we'll need your help to get some Americans over." And we've been at CPAC in Tokyo ever since, and I think we've been to over 12 countries, and we're in 5 continents. I always say we go everywhere except for where the penguins live. We're really going everywhere.
Well,
maybe we need
time
CPAC
for that.
Greenland. I don't know, Sandy.
Oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to go with you. Matt, it's been great to watch, and that means that your good influence, along with Mercedes, has spread. And I think there's people around the world, even if they can't verbalize it, I think they realize that something is really, really wrong. And they're hungry for the truth about things. And I think certainly we're talking about political things, but also behind it is a whole lot of truth. The foundation is one of commitment to truth. And so they're resonating with that, because the problems in America are worldwide, happening everywhere. Did you say Central and South America, you think that they are stirring up in such a way that they're coming back to the right?
Look, it started with, the most outstanding victory was Javier Milei in Argentina.
Yes.
And then his, it was great. The Reagan policies, the free market policies, they work. What a surprise, they work. and he's been able to tame inflation. He's been able to, have the poverty rate. People feel real hope in Argentina. Free market principles are being revisited and relearned. And we have a great president in Paraguay, where we also had a CPAC. We have CPACs every year in Argentina, by the way. And, this Flavio Bolsonaro, the son of Jair Bolsonaro, is working with his brother Eduardo. We'll be having a CPAC in exile, because it's too unsafe to go there. We'll be having that in Florida later this year, so stay tuned for that one. But there, we just had a great victory in Chile with Jose Antonio Kast, who's actually a great friend of ours, a wonderful Christian, pro-life conservative president of Chile, which is a long time coming. There's great hope in Colombia. So, and Bukele has started great things happening in Central America. So there's so much happening in Western Europe. I think we're going to win in all these countries that, it might be too late, but in the UK, where we're going to have a CPAC in July, in Germany, where I don't know if we've announced the dates yet for it, but we'll be having a CPAC in Germany, and we're working with the people of Ireland. So, there's I'm not saying CPAC is responsible for this. I guess what I'm saying is CPAC is a good agitator for the results that we want in all these countries. And just not that many years ago, Sandy, you could have counted on one hand the real freedom fighters around the globe. I think we've at least doubled it. So, and I think CPAC's played a role in that. So, people say, well, what does that matter to me here in America? Well, I think for Christians, and my guess is primarily of Christians listening to your show, people of the Bible at least, we've always been told that there's a spiritual war going on. And when I first got into politics, I kind of didn't maybe understand it very well. It sounded very esoteric. Now I understand it.
Yes, you sure do.
And there's a spiritual war being done, being engaged all over the world, but it's to destroy America because it's so clear that America is the foundation for civilization at this time. And it doesn't mean America's perfect, doesn't mean that all Americans are godly. It just means that America has this role to play, and because of the God-given ideals that it represents and has always stood for, and that is all under attack everywhere, all at once, all around the globe.
You know, I just heard Clarence Thomas. He did a speech at the University of Texas. I don't know if you saw that yet, Matt, but I highly recommend it. He was just talking about our founders again, things that we already know, but that we're all created equal. All men are created equal, and we get our rights from God, not from government. And that applies to people all over the world. That's not just applying to the United States. And I think it's kind of a natural thing for people, and that's why they're waking up in some instances. I just saw a video from Ireland. All these people in the streets protesting the government over there, Matt, I don't really know what the particulars are, but it just shows you that people are stirred up and there are things happening all over the globe, not just in our country.
Another term besides spiritual warfare that I didn't really necessarily understand, but I've come to understand it, is this idea of the silent majority. I think that was first brought up by Richard Nixon in his time in the 60s and 70s. But this idea that there are a majority of people that like traditional ways, but they're not really organized, they're not really signed up, and they get undercounted. And I think that's true all over the world. I think in Europe, you have these people that are not regular church attenders anymore, and maybe even you might describe them as secular. But over time, they've come to realize that they're too secular, that they took it too far, that the role of the church and religion in society is very important. And so it's interesting in the new generation all throughout Europe and really all throughout the world, I'm Catholic. You have a lot of young people that are returning in Catholic nations, returning to their Catholic roots. You have a lot of people that are joining, that are professing a devotion to Christ. You just see young people saying, I tried this thing that my parents told me would make me happy, which is no God, no truth, do what you want, do what feels good, just focus on yourself. And It didn't work for most of them. It didn't work for their country. Well, first of all, it doesn't work for anyone at any time. But the realization by many that it doesn't work is a phenomenon around the globe. So you have this, this tilt away and hostility towards religion. And I think this silent majority has tilted things back to the idea that maybe we should look to religion. It doesn't mean that church leaders are always right. My own church has been really disappointing in a lot of ways. What we have to realize about our churches is they're run mostly in my denomination by men, and they're men, and they make the mistakes of men. And the beautiful thing about the mistakes of men is it reminds us why men are created by God, and God is who we follow.
That's right, Matt. Well said. I always think of that. You make me think of, as you were talking, Blaise Pascal, the famous mathematician, who said that we are created with a God-shaped vacuum that only God can fill.
That's
true of mankind. And so, all right, so let's come back to this one country that just had a kind of an upheaval and that you're very familiar with. And let me just say before I ask you about your experiences there, Matt, when I was a young girl, a Hungarian came and gave. We used to have assemblies in school, and it would be people from all walks of life who'd come in and talk about who knows. And it happened to be a Hungarian who had come out of the revolution in Hungary, and he told. I think I was 10 years old. He told us the story of what happened in that revolution, and then he started to cry, and started to talk about how the Americans let them down. That really just bore on my heart for years, Matt. And, of course, it's become a pattern through the years, and that's not really what I want to talk about. But that was my intro to Hungary. Now, Hungary, as I understand it, historically has been a very proud, they have this, I think of their horses, I think of them, the men going off to war. they were had a great reputation for strength and honor. And so then they get overtaken. I'm skipping through a lot of hundreds of years here, but they get swallowed up by the Soviet Union. And what happened to them is the same thing that happened to all those countries. They were just in bondage for all of those years. And then they came out of it, and they became part of the new Europe. Now, my question for you before I start asking, did they belong to the European Union, or did
yes.
they kind of – they did. Okay. All right, so
– yeah, they belong to the European Union, and part of the trouble is that the European Union was so hostile towards Hungary because of Orbán's conservative policies, most especially starting with immigration, that they literally owe the Hungarian people billions of dollars in tax rebates, which they refused to let go to try to blackmail Orbán into changing his policies. And one of the things that worked against Viktor Orbán is that the person who beat him, this new guy, is probably going to be able to get a reset with the EU and get that money, where Orbán had become so personal that the EU just hated him so much, they wouldn't let the money go. Even when, I believe, behind the scenes, President Trump was trying to push to let the money go. I mean, this is a small country of something like 6 to 9 million people. You know, when you're holding on to billions of dollars, I've read as much as it could be as much as $7 billion or so that's owed the Hungarian people, maybe even more. You know, it has a massive economic impact.
Absolutely. So I know most of what I know about Viktor Orbán through you, Matt, because you've brought him to CPAC. I got to meet him, thanks to you. And I think I was interviewed by Hungarian television. So I remember things that they ask me, which, but I, rather than me guessing or poking at things, tell us in your from your perspective what you touched on it. It's the immigration thing, but tell me what you think Viktor Orbán accomplished in his 16 years as prime minister.
Well, what he showed a really, you know, I call it a mighty country. You know, it's kind of like Mighty Mouse, right? It's a small country without a port, with really, after World War I, no ability to really be a player. And he told his people that if they wanted to, you know, embrace Hungarian sovereignty and Hungarian culture and the Hungarian language, which is quite unique, they could do it. And they could do it proudly. And they could get away with it. And they just because they were a member of the EU and they need to be a member of the EU because they're small, it doesn't mean that they're going to be trampled upon. And this guy, over 16 years, really longer than that, because he was fighting the communists even before that. But this guy, with George Soros, who's a Hungarian, spending so much money to try to beat him every year, he was able to show this country that they can be mighty and proud. And he stood up against everyone. And by the end, everybody knows his name. It was 16 years ago, no one knew who he was. Now everyone knows his name in politics because he showed everyone in Europe that you can do this. And you know what's interesting, Sandy? A lot of other countries are doing this now, too. They're saying, even the new guy in Hungary is saying that he's not going to change the immigration policies because those are the right policies. Matter of fact, I don't think he'll change many policies. And I think what you see in the surrounding countries, you know, I spend time in the region, in Poland and Romania, Czech Republic. I mean, these communities, Central and Eastern Europe, they're saying, well, Hungary did it. Why can't we do it? Why can't we be proud of our heritage? Why can't we be proud of our Christian religion, yet while still making a happy and a safe place for their Jewish communities? Why can't we be proud of our language? Why do we have to do net zero and trans our kids and all this insanity that Brussels is pushing from the EU, just like the UN does from New York City? You know, let's stop this. And so even in his loss, he's, I think, changed the trajectory of Central and Eastern Europe because they have been ruined by kind of been spoiled by all these modern policies that Western Europe has been.
Yes, totally. And then there's the issue of immigration, which you mentioned, but we didn't really talk about it. The EU was forcing all of these countries, including the standard European countries we're accustomed to, like Germany and France and all of those, to accept, this is a narrow explanation, but open borders. And then there was this incredible migration of young Muslim men by the thousands. And Orbán refused that, did he not?
He did. He proudly said there was zero illegal migration into his country. He built a fence, much like Trump built a wall. and said no, and it was considered racist, xenophobic, Islamophobic when he did it. I mean, when we first decided to have CPAC in Hungary, and then we also let Orban speak at our CPAC in Texas during the pandemic or whatever we call that now. We were the subject of scathing editorials, and I had conservative and liberal friends said they'd never speak to me again. They said he's a dictator, he's a hater, he's a racist, and so that really got my attention, and I studied more and more, and I came to this conclusion that this is exactly what they did in America. They made the traditional or conservative or really American point of view really be the racist and hateful point of view. And even with our religious viewpoints, they turned it into a hateful, bigoted viewpoint. And they did it very effectively through, you know, Hollywood and the media. And they did the same thing in Europe. And this guy Orban just said, no, I'm not going along with this. And he's given a lot of hope. I feel great hope moving forward, even with the losses. Even, you know, we had a big loss here with Trump in 2020 or whatever we want to call that. And it's the same for Orban, which is sometimes even in losing, there's a higher purpose that can be achieved. And I think we have a chance to save Europe.
Yes, I hope so, Matt. I hope so. I'm optimistic, too. And I'm realistic but optimistic, which I think describes you, too. But I want to now look. I've been reading all the stuff on Orban because I know what I know, again, through you, and I do trust you. But there's a lot of criticism. So this is a BBC report. You know, BBC doesn't have an opinion about anything.
Yeah.
But they describe Viktor Orban this way. Clip two.
Viktor Orban is a conservative, Christian nationalist, anti-immigration and Eurosceptic politician who's been prime minister in Hungary for 16 years. Peter Magyar is also a conservative nationalist, originally from Viktor Orban's party, but now he's promising a fresh start for Hungary, more open-minded, closer to Europe, less cozy with Russia.
Less cozy with Russia. That's what I keep reading, that he's very close to Vladimir Putin. Okay, so...
Yeah, so I don't disagree with anything that reporter said. I think it's right. I think Eurosceptic means that he doesn't want Brussels setting the laws of Hungary. He wants to set the laws of Hungary. He's a Christian nationalist. He and his wife, one is Catholic, one is, they say Calvinist over there. One's Protestant, one's Catholic. That describes the landscape of the country, by the way. And he's a Christian, and he is a nationalist. He believes in the sovereignty of the Hungarian people, that even though they're a member of the EU and a member of NATO, that doesn't diminish their sovereignty. And that's what Trump believes in America. So all that's true. I think the one criticism of Orban, which is probably the number one reason he lost, is that he'd been in power so long, longer than any other modern European elected official. Think about that. Longer than FDR in America. So, like, this is a guy who's been around forever, and the economy's weak. The attack in Iran did not help their energy prices either, and Hungary is little, no seaport, no real fossil fuel. So it's not that he's a Putin guy, it's just that they have to get their energy from Russia. It's just the way it is. It's a reality. So they turn that into, oh, he's a stooge for Russia. The other thing is he did not like the war in Ukraine. He did not like Russia attacking Ukraine, but he also felt like we should get to peace and that peace would help the Hungarian people. So he pushed for a peace deal from the very beginning, and that made Biden furious because Biden really seemed to want to wage this war and gave Zelensky billions and billions of dollars. And Orban said that's a mistake. And by the way, in my travels to the region, the only thing people fear worse in the region than a militaristic Russia is a militaristic Ukraine. Ukraine is not popular amongst its neighbors now. So these divisions between these countries run deep. And in America, it's like Zelensky's the good guy, Putin's the bad guy. Everyone's rooting for Ukraine. No one's rooting for Russia. And, of course, the facts on the ground are much different.
Absolutely. Well, we know that. Even Ukraine and Russia, there's very, very, very little separating them. And the corruption in Ukraine is legendary. Plus, we know that Biden was part of that corruption and got a lot of that money himself. So it's not so easy, is it, things are never that simple. But I want to tell, there's something else I want to tell you. I read this long article by CNN, and they're talking about Viktor Orban's propaganda machine and how he ruled the press and how the people out in the poor people out in the countryside only knew what Viktor Orban's news outlet would say. But then it got down to the very last page, and they had this paragraph, and it mentions a person in the media, and it's Panya, whatever that means, but I won't get into that. It's just Panya was far from the first to be targeted by Orban's propaganda machine. Over the past 16 years, state media has had vilified a whole cast of alleged enemies, from the liberal philanthropist George Soros to more recently Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. So when I saw George Soros's name in that as him criticizing, you know, that kind of negates everything they said. It just shows you. You have to be so careful, Matt. The propaganda now for us, I think, is worse. Worse. Yes. It's worse to find the truth right now in any of our press, don't you think?
Yeah, because when I was young, you know, you knew the press was liberal, but there were journalists, and now they're gone. So, you know, very rare. I could count on one hand the real journalists, for instance, in Washington, D.C. Like, and what I mean by that was they had their point of view, but they tried most of the time to bury their point of view, and they tried to they were searching for facts. They wanted to know what really happened at the White House or what really happened in the Senate. And now most of them, they're lazy at best, and at worst, they're propagandists just for the left-wing cause. And look, on the right, it's not much better. I am sad. I mean, when we have a CPAC conference, we'll get criticized more from the right than the left, or at least equal. You know, and that's just dumb. The people that are donating to those conservative media outlets are doing it to hit the Marxism of the propaganda from the left. But in this world of clicks and social media, they lose track, and then they just want to, you know, try to push scandals and try to push divisions, and this one hates that one. It's kind of the moment we're in as conservatives, which is, you know, our family feud, which is always going on, which is pretty normal in a family. You know, they want it to be public and gory and have everyone see that the conservatives are divided. And what's beautiful about the CPAC conference is underneath that silly coverage of famous conservatives all attacking each other, underneath it, there are divisions, but people are very united in what they see is we have a very short time with Trump to get stuff done. And I think that's true in these other countries, too. They feel the same way about their timing of how little time they have to try to make a difference.
Yeah. Well, division, of course, is the goal for anybody that opposes the country, as far as I'm concerned, or opposes what's right and wrong. It's confusion and division. But I want to, one last thing about Hungary that I want to mention to you that sounds like what's happening here. And this is, again, the BBC. And this is the reporters covering a group the night that Orban lost called Dismantle the System. Let's listen.
So Hungary without Viktor Orban, does it feel real yet?
Not really. I don't think it really sank into everybody's mind yet. There was one very euphoric evening, but then again, the sun rose the next day and people had to confront the reality.
At the Petimajar election party, there were a lot of young people. You were there, you saw it. I assume many of them very progressive and have been outraged at where Orban has taken the country.
All right, so much of what I'm reading, Matt, it's young people. I mean, that was a whole group of young people just delighted, excited about the change. And it made me wonder if there isn't some similarity between what happened in Hungary and what's happening with our young people now. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, look, I think the problem in Hungary is when you have a very little country like that, especially for young men, they don't feel a lot of economic hope or at least opportunities if they want to get married and have kids. Like, you know, it's like kind of a little bit similar to what we hear here. Like, how will I ever buy a house? How will I ever afford to get a car? You have kind of like a malaise that set in with young men. And the difference in America is there are a lot of economic opportunities, but AI is, you know, out there, and that threatens a lot of people who feel like they don't even know what job area to focus on. They don't know what the disruption of AI and technology will be. So there is this concern with the youth. Now, I will say this. You know, Hungary, being the prime minister of Hungary is a little bit, you know, it's about the same size as being like the mayor of New York City. You know, the prime minister has a lot of power and perceived power. So, like, if your family did well over the course of the last generation, you probably love Orban. If you feel like your family's struggling, you know, even the prime minister told me, he goes, you know, I've been here for 16 years, so, like, I don't have anyone to blame. If someone's in trouble, you know, they're saying economic trouble. They're saying, well, it's the government of Viktor Orban's fault. So, you know, it's hard to blame the previous guy when you are the previous guy. I guess you look at it that way. People like FDR survived in office because there was obviously you know, all the tumult of a world war, and you know, we had the Depression. We just had, like, America just was going through so many political distractions that it was easier for a political leader to keep on top of that. And for Viktor Orban this time in Central Europe, you know, the economy is soft. And the economy is soft because of the war between Russia and Ukraine. And then the military operations in Iran didn't help things for him. So, you know, I think he was not overly surprised that his message didn't resonate with young people who are saying, you know, young people, Sandy, you used to be young, by the way, so did I. They're saying, hey, so. I'm not getting ahead with this guy. Let me give the other guy a chance. I remember when I was young and I didn't have health care and I said, you know, I'm not voting for Bill Clinton, but if he wins, at least I get free health care. I said it sarcastically. But, you know, young people think that way. They think they don't have anything yet. And they're thinking about how do I actually possibly afford that next thing. And I will just say, all the young people listening, I was just like 34 years old before I bought a house. It actually wasn't that unusual in America to have to save for a house for a really long time. This is not a new phenomenon. It might be worse, but it's not a new phenomenon. It's, you know, that's a very, very expensive thing to do. And be careful when you ask for a new government program to help young people buy houses, because pretty soon, when you're then in your middle age, they'll be taking all your money to pay for all the programs that you no longer benefit from and are probably filled with waste, fraud, and abuse.
Yes, I think you're right. I think you're right. Well, I was just thinking, just listening to that, I was wondering if there was some effort to reach the young people with a different strand of messages. But that you know, aside from that, you're right. The young people here are restless because...
That's a big part of CPAC. You know, we always skew young with our audience, especially in America. I think we have a 30% increase in young people. We always have tons of young people. We just don't have them be the center of it. I think the groups that put young people at the center of it, that's their mission. It's really not our mission. Young people should be at everything. But they don't need to be at the center of everything. They need to actually listen. They need to listen to their elders, and I need to listen to my elders. We have this cult of youth in our culture, and I don't think it's so healthy.
I don't either, and I think it starts in the home. Like, well, what does Mary think? I've heard that started when I was a parent. I saw some of my friends doing that. My parent, are you kidding me? Did your mom and dad care what you thought about things, Matt?
No. We had no votes as a family.
No, don't. Just sit there and be quiet. But maybe that's not the way to go.
Eat your peas.
Yeah, eat your peas, and you'll be happy. You'll eat your peas, and you'll be happy. Well, in the remaining moments that we have, Matt, let's do turn our attentions to our country. You started that path, and you also touched on the fact that there's so much division. I don't even want to go into that about Candace Owen and Tucker and all those controversies, because I talk about it enough at this microphone. But it's not just that. It's the young people we just talked about not being able to get ahead economically. It's all the messages coming at people, the confusion, the vilifying of President Trump in every way, the war in Iran. So what are your thoughts about the state of our country? Are you as concerned about the midterms as many Republicans are? Are you?
Yeah, I'm worried about America's future. I felt, you know, buoyed by Trump's win, and I love what President Trump is doing in office. But, you know, he's so idiosyncratic that I feel like it'll be hard to keep it going with, like, a successor. Not impossible, just hard, because he's just so unique. He's such a unique man of history. And I also worry that Trump is really kind of running the Republican Party. He's operating as like the House Whip. He's, you know, he's kind of everything. And when he's gone, how do we replace all that? And I think the skirmishing with all these famous and semi-famous conservatives is a little bit a part of that. As Trump, as his grip wanes, I think we'll see more of this. And I think it's going to be the job of those of us who are less famous and less central and maybe less focused on like our social media following and stuff to keep this thing together. I mean, CPAC alone, we were the first people to invite Donald Trump when he's a Democrat. We were the first people to invite Tulsi Gabbard when she was a liberal Democrat. We were the first people to invite RFK when he was running as a Democrat against Donald Trump. And we invited them to our conferences and many more because we want to grow this coalition. And the coalition is not just filled with Christian conservative Republicans. It includes a whole bunch of people that only agree maybe on a couple of issues, but they're important, like MAHA or something like that. So, you know, that's what I'm going to spend my time on, is reminding people what we have in common and then reminding them how close we were to losing America and how quickly we'll be right back there again if we're too cavalier in this idea that somehow we have a majority. I think it's very, very tenuous, and I am quite concerned about the midterms because I'm not sure I see the same kind of spirit of we must defeat Marxism like I saw just a couple of years ago, and we have to rekindle that.
I find that and also the thing that disappoints me, Matt, is that we have so many traitors in our midst. And by that I don't mean they're leaking secrets to the Chinese, but people who are leaking secrets, who don't feel eager to get attention and are willing to throw their government, their agency under the bus. But I do want to ask you about Congress. I met you first when you were working, had a really high position with George W. Bush. That's how we met. So you're very familiar with the workings of Congress. I am so concerned about the Senate, Matt, and also the House, but more about the Senate right now. What are your thoughts about that, or can you share them?
What do you mean? You're worried that we lose the majority, or you worried that we don't use the majority?
I'm worried that they're squandering. They're squandering their moments to actually govern and get a lot of good things done in puzzling ways, not allowing recess appointments by the president, and refusing to make it possible to pass the SAVE Act, the Save America Act.
Look, my view, Sandy, is that nothing is an accident. This is not accidental. This is all purposeful.
This is
not all because John Thune is weak, as you know, I read that commentary all the time. John Thune represents what a majority of his conference wants. So what you have is, and Mitch McConnell, as much as he's been, you know, poor mouthed by people, and I'm harsh on him too, in the end, he was representing what his conference wants, and his conference is filled with Republicans who don't want to do anything that's too hard, and they don't want to do anything that's too aggressive. They just want to kind of like get, you know, move forward carefully and gingerly. And that's not the time we're in. And that's why we waited in this primary of Cornyn versus Paxton. Like I said, Cornyn has been a longtime friend of mine. I have no personal animosity towards him, but he's become inert. He's become stale. He's become like the fabric that's on the couch that he takes naps on. He's indistinguishable from just kind of like just doing nothing. And we are not in a time when we can have people like that. So Ken Paxton, some people criticize him. He's no perfect man, but he's a friend of freedom. And he's in every fight that matters. He's right in the middle of every fight that matters. That's who I want. I want someone who's going to get blood and dirt in his uniform. And we don't have that in the Senate. We have it. It's better in the House, and Mike Johnson has done a great job. But when Trump's gone, I worry that everybody kind of like loses a couple steps. And that would be a disaster. So it's very important, Sandy, you play an important role in this, for citizens to understand the huge role they have in making sure these folks know. I mean, I hear from my donors to CPAC on a regular basis. I pick up my phone. I got 5 more texts from people saying, why the heck did we fight so hard to elect these people if they're not going to pass the Save America Act? And, you know, I try to explain to them why it's not passing, but there's really no good answer. It should pass. It just should pass. And we should make those guys, if they're going to stop it in the most publicly disgraceful way possible so that everybody can see what their character is. And we're not doing that, and we should.
Oh, I totally agree. And I totally agree it's not an accident. It's purposeful.
No,
but I'd even go a step on that because, Matt, how these guys, I recognize, want to keep their power. And they don't even care, I don't think, that the Democrats get into power, because they'd still be elected and they'd have less hassle. They're not responsible anymore. That makes sense to me. But what they're doing threatens the fabric of this country. What they're not doing, that's the part that I don't understand. Do they not love their country? Do they not see what it's going to be doing, not securing the borders and securing those people that are coming in and voting, what it's going to do to their children and grandchildren?
I think some of these liberal Republicans even benefit from crazy voting schemes with no voter ID. You know, I live in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I went to go vote no on their attempt to steal four Republican congressional seats. By the way, those Republicans are very diverse. Some are pro-choice, some are pro-life. It's not like four conservatives, but, you know, it's the diversity of Virginia, which is about a 51-49 state. So the congressional delegation should be pretty split, but they're going to try to take four Republican seats. I went to go vote, and a reporter came up to me from a liberal organization to introduce himself to me, and I said, hey, did you give your ID like I did? And I kind of smiled at him, and he kind of smiled back. It's like, it's really not that hard. If they can have voter ID in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I didn't just have to give my ID. She looked at it. She asked me to recite what my address was. She asked me a few questions about myself. You know, the sad thing in Virginia, they'll get rid of that requirement very soon, unless we pass the Save America Act, and they'll never, we'll never come close in Virginia again, just like they did in Colorado, just like they did in the state of Washington. All these states where we used to be close in, Utah's next. They get rid of any real form of voter ID. They move to as much voting by mail as possible, because that allows for people to vote for other people without ID. That's why they want vote by mail. And we will lose more of those states. And so it's critical. And Mike Lee tells me it's constitutional, so that's all I need to hear, for us to make sure that you have a photo voter ID in this country.
You know, I used to vote in Virginia, too, and I loved that you had to show photo. I'm in Florida now. We have to do the same thing. So it just feels right. And why these guys won't make that the law in all the states is beyond me. But that's the situation. Well, Matt, you've made an incredible difference in this country in your adult life, and especially through CPAC, I think. And so I thank you for that. And I'm so grateful that you spread out internationally so that you know, just the whole notion of liberty can be exported. And I think it's working. And I love what you and Mercedes have done. So thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. And thanks for being such a good friend. And keep up the hard work. You never tire. I love that.
Matt, your thank you. Your podcast, You're in Mercedes. I've forgotten this. How people can see that? What the name of it is?
Well,
actually,
we took a little break from the podcast, but we're relaunching it. So stay tuned. We're right in the midst of working all that out now. We missed doing it, and we're going to get started again.
Okay, but you can be seen on Newsmax. You guys, I think you're still doing that, right?
Mercy and I are both on Newsmax, and she's on every night on the Right Squad, which is kind of a version of The Five on Fox, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful. So anyway, okay, Matt, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for your valuable time.
Sandy,
I really appreciate it. God bless you and Mercy. Thank you.
All right, God bless you. Bye-bye.
All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors, just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously, and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Very excited. Very excited. It's a new area for Hungary.
It's wonderful. I was waiting for it for 16 years.
The hope in everyone's eyes. Like, you could see it. You could feel it in the city.
I'm feeling absolutely amazing.
You know, it's really scary to me, and I think it is to you too, that media can, they can inform you, which is what they're supposed to do. You know, I would really miss the news if I didn't get to watch it. I do every day. Some days I miss, but I try, you know, sometimes I need a break. But most of the time, and then I have to jump back in and catch up because it's what's happening in our world. And I just want to know what's happening. But what if, and certainly we know it happens, you couldn't trust anything you were watching? What if they're molding your mind? What if we're losing the war in Iran? What if the fact that's what the Iranians are hearing? They're in complete propaganda, and some media outlets in this country are making it sound like we're losing that war, which we're not. It's maddening. And that's what I think has happened to the Hungarian people. It's funny because CNN, in this long article I read, is claiming that Orban was giving propaganda to all the people in Hungary, and that somehow this new prime minister, Peter Maguire, has gotten past that. Well, I don't know. All I know is when I was reading CNN, when they talked about the propaganda, they talked about how Viktor Orban, you know, was criticizing George Soros, that wonderful philanthropist George Soros, which is a red flag for me. It makes me think that this piece by CNN is not true. And so that's how smart we have to be. It is so hard to know what outlet you can trust, what person you can trust. And we need to know the truth, and we can't just assume that our assumptions are right. There's always going to be new information. I mean, if we were losing the war in Iran, I would want to know. Wouldn't you want to know? If Israel was, you know, committing genocide in Gaza and it were true, wouldn't you want to know? I'd want to know. I don't believe they are by any measure. But it's really hard to know what's true now, and I think you would agree with that. And I guess that's why I hope that you know that when you tune into Sandy Rios 24/7, I'm doing my very best to bring you the truth. I'm doing my very best to never say anything that isn't true. And that's a commitment that I make to you. And through the years, I've always said, and I've certainly have gotten takers, if I make a mistake, if I misspeak, because I do that sometimes, it's easy. That's easier for me to do anyway. I like correction, and I try to correct things I used to on the air all the time if I misstated something. But if I'm telling you something that's not true, and you know it isn't, then I want to hear from you on that too. So please help me with that, because you need to be able to trust me. So if you'd like to make a comment about that, you can call us at 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040, or you can write us at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.